Welcome to Female Empowered, a podcast for female fitness and wellness professionals and business owners looking for real talk about the ins and outs of the industry. I'm Krista Gurka, an accidental entrepreneur turned founder and CEO of a multi-million dollar health and wellness business. In this podcast, I'll be sharing expert insights and having real conversations about what it means to show up, thrive, and of course, get paid. We'll talk about what works, what doesn't, and what really happens behind the scenes of a client-based business, all so you can take away sound advice and actionable steps that help you become a more successful and confident business owner, all on your own terms. So let's dive in. Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Female Empowered. I am your host, Krista Gurka, and today is a guest, another Female Friday. Actually, it's not called Female Friday anymore. It's called Female Founder because I changed my release date from Friday to Tuesday. So I can't call it Female Friday anymore, but it's a guest episode today. And I have the pleasure of having Robin McNeil here with us. I actually met Robin through Claire Pelletreau, who we both did her Get Paid Marketing program, and we were on her podcast together, which, well, at the time of this recording just came out and we're like in the middle of October. So Robin is an identity coach and a mentor of coaches. I think primarily you work with like coaches, consultants, kind of the gamut of things, primarily high achievers, which is why her and I connected so well. And I'm going to shoot it over to you and let you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell everyone who you are and what it is that you do.
Yeah. Well, I'm Robin. And it's interesting. I've been a coach we're going on 13 years now. Wow. So I started in corporate as a manager, and we started doing coaching training, and that became a passion of mine. I actually decided to become certified within the organization to do leadership coaching, kind of executive coaching. But through manifestation and fate, moved away from that job, and I found the online space and was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I guess, you know, I've got quite a few skill sets. I can maybe be a VA, maybe be a social media manager, and sort of started in this realm and thought, oh, I'm going to have to do this for like 5-10 years before I can really call myself a coach online. And it took just probably only 3 or 6 months, first half of the time, yeah, that I was doing it. And I was like, yeah, no, look at all these people who are coaching without certification, without any sort of experience, I can do this. And so I pivoted into coaching. And yeah, I've been there ever since. And, you know, throughout the years, I've kind of shifted my niche, but it always came back to that one person, which is a lot like me and you, that high achiever, the deep intellect, the, you know, person who might be considered gifted throughout school. And then how do you be an entrepreneur when you have this high functioning brain? And my entire business is kind of wrapped around, how do we get you out of your head and taking the actions that you need to take when you are so incredibly gifted and smart and you can DIY pretty much anything? And that's where I've kind of come full circle back to, it's really in our identity and really coming back to that inner bitch. Mm-hmm. I hope we can swear.
Yeah. Listen, apparently my podcast is explicit.
Perfect.
So you can drop an F-bomb whenever you want.
Great. I will probably drop a few. So yeah, but it really is. It's finding that inner bitch, because we've been held back for so long. We've been trying to climb corporate ranks and we're playing, you know, the nice girl. Cause if we don't, we get called name, we get called bitch, we get called mm-hmm. aggressive. Mm-hmm. But there is that person inside of us that if we were born a man, would be so much easier to express. And then you come into entrepreneurship and you're trying to play by these rules again, instead of just being who you are. And you and I both know, if you're going to market yourself as a coach or a person, as an individual, you got to really show who you are. Mm-hmm.
So much so. I definitely agree with that last statement, which is, I think, hard. I think it's kind of hard for anybody, to be honest,
oh, yeah.
that wasn't trained in business, but I think it's particularly hard for females. Mm-hmm. Because there is that kind of negative connotation that comes along with being a boss. And I really don't love that term, like girl boss. I mean, I just, I'm a CEO or, you know, but I'd love to just backtrack for a quick second because I'm always really interested in people's origin stories. So you did say you started in corporate. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to necessarily tell us what company it was, but what kind of, when you say corporate, there's like this huge umbrella. So like, was it financial? Was it a, you know, how, what was your role in that company?
Yeah. I've had multiple roles, actually. It's pretty interesting. If you go back through my resume, I've done immigration work. Wow. I've done legal work. Yeah. But this role in particular was actually in recreation. So I was managing an aquatics department. I had anywhere from 60 to 90 staff on my team at any one time. And because of the largeness of the team and because aquatics and life-saving is quite heavy, coaching is a really big part of that, and leadership even bigger, because you've got teenagers who have to enforce rules mm-hmm. for safety. So yeah, I managed that department for 10 years, and I had to train upwards of, you know, 10, I would have roughly 10 leadership positions that reported to me during that time. And then it became sort of a lateral coaching
right.
type, where I was right. actually coaching other managers within yeah. the facility and becoming, it's a national organization too. So then it was coaching on a national level. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did a lot of lifeguarding through, like that was my summer job in high school and college. And so I, total funny story about my like lifeguard certification, but that's another podcast. But the thought of just hearing like 60 to 90 people reporting to you and managing that many people gives me a stomach ache because but I'm curious though, mm-hmm. now that you are an entrepreneur, so now that it is your business, is it different? I'm always curious of this, like, is it different when you were managing 60 to 90 people, when it wasn't your business, however, that was your role, and maybe managing 4 or 5 people when it is your business? Is it a different skill? Is it different feelings wrapped around that?
No, I would say it feels very similar. I mean, it's definitely easier to manage a few people versus 90 at a time. Yeah. But then again, right, I was more managing supervisors and the head lifeguards, and they were taking on a lot of the team role. I think the biggest thing, I had a lot of autonomy in my position. I still was able to make decisions, but I had no control over the value systems of the organization. And mm-hmm. I think that's where I felt like I couldn't continue there because my values and theirs were not matching up anymore. And so when I have switched over and become a CEO, become a leader to my own team, it was more important for me that we were all on the same level with our value systems than it is for me to have you be an incredible VA, for example. Because I can teach you that stuff. Yep. And that was my philosophy, actually, as I hired people. I can teach anyone to be a great lifeguard. I can teach anyone to be a good supervisor and leader. What I can't teach you is attitude. What I can't teach you is a value system because it's so ingrained in you.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I even believe that in our industry, which is health and wellness, if I would rather, even now we're in recruiting, oftentimes I recruit a person and a personality type because I can teach the hard skills. Yeah. I can teach, now I can't license someone as a physical therapist, but as long as you have your license, for the most part, I can teach you how to be a better clinician. I can teach someone how to be a better Pilates instructor, if they're open to coaching, which is part of attitude, right? And part of those softer skills that, to be honest, are more important. And I see so many people hiring, especially right now with the crazy, you know, whatever you want to call it, quiet quitting, great resignation, whatever you want to call it right now, people are like, oh, I just need the skill set. I'm like, no, you need the other skills first. Like, Take the time to train people in the hard skills, but the soft skills are what's going to carry you through for sure. So fast forward to what you do today. Mm-hmm. A lot of our listeners are probably very similar to you and me in that we are high achievers. And I'll speak for myself. Some of the things that go through my mind that are challenging, I will say, are I am a person that always has a lot of ideas. So going, lots of ideas. So that's one thing. So where I find the challenge in that is that it is sometimes challenging for me when everyone on my team is not like running alongside me, like, yeah, we're with you. We got this. They're usually like holding on for dear life from behind being like, I don't know, where is she going with this? Like, you know, and then I'm doing like loop-de-loops because I'm not running in a straight line. So is that something common that you see in a lot of women that you coach? And what are some of the, I guess, strategies or what are some of the things you work on with these women, if that is something you see?
Yeah, I would say it's 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah, 50-50. A lot of my clients, actually, they really know their human design, and human design has played a bit of a big part in that. So if anyone listening, you know human design.
Yeah. Can you actually, I know it's, some people might know what it is, but not everyone. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
It's like I want to say it's a personality type of, I don't even know what you really call it.
It's like
astrology crossed with like personality, but it's based on your birth date and you can't really change it. Whereas like if you take your Myers-Briggs is a little more flexible. Human design is like, this is your design. That's it. You're done. But I've never ran into a human design that hasn't matched the person in front of me either. So I think too, depending on their human design, And I'm always surprised by this because I've been studying it, trying to figure out, is there some sort of correlation between, you know, the multi-passionate and high achieving women? And I haven't found it yet. And that's why I say I'm still like 50-50. They're either, no, like this is my path and I know it. I have a lot of ideas on this path and I don't know how to bring them all to life, but... or articulate it. I think maybe articulation is kind of the hardest part, is like, how do I really articulate what's going on inside my head?
Yeah.
Or you have the ones like you and me who are definitely like, I want to do this and I want to do this and like, let's go. And we go in this circle. And I've seen that even in myself. I was looking at some old documents today that I had done 2 years ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's exactly what I'm planning to do now.
But isn't that crazy?
2 years ago. Yeah. But I would say the themes that come out the strongest for high achievers are their need to people please, mm-hmm. the need to be perfect, mm-hmm. and then procrastinating when things are not perfect. And those are generally symptoms of something else that we have to unravel. Why are these things coming up? Why are they happening? Is it your conditioning? Is it fear? What's really going on under the surface? And that tends to be like, those three tend to be the top things that we work on.
Yeah. I call them the three P's because we talk about this a lot in our coaching programs. And I can say that I have at one time or currently do experience all of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I also think I was for the most part brought up in the 80s. I mean, I'm a 70s baby, but the 80s was really, you know, adolescence, teenage, you know, years. And for sure, growing up in the 80s was very different because our parents were, I mean, my parents were great, but they just weren't really around a lot. It wasn't like sitting down with us and helping us with homework and, you know, and things of that nature. So perfectionism was a huge thing and a huge thing for me as a business owner to overcome. And I remember the first time I really did that was when I was in a coaching program. And it's similar to kind of what you said when you were on the podcast with Claire, when she's like, if you don't have your ads done, don't come to the next coaching call. They told me, I had said I wanted to hire a VA for a while. And they said, if you haven't hired your VA, don't come to the next coaching call. And I was like, what? Like, that's a lot of pressure. And I'm such a rule follower and people pleaser that I would not go, like, I couldn't not do my assignment, you know what I mean? Like, with that hard task on there, I could not do it. And that was the first time when I met my VA, who still works with me now. Sarah, if you're listening, actually, she will listen because she edits the podcast. So Sarah, who I met, as she's my VA now, she's been working with me for over 2 years. And I had to learn to let go of that perfectionism and recognize that as we were learning to work with each other, things were not going to be perfect, right? But it was only perfect. Like, I bet you 99.999% of people that looked at whatever it is that I was putting out didn't even, no one's looking at it that much. It's like in my own head, right? Yeah. Of like all of that stuff. So can you talk a little bit about, because I do love that correlation between perfectionism and procrastination. So would you mind talking a little bit about how those two are sometimes like opposite sides of the same coin?
Opposite sides of the same coin. Yeah. I think they just feed off each other.
They do,
quite honestly. And you can have procrastination without perfectionism and use perfectionism as an excuse. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just not right. I'm not going to put my website up because it's just not quite right yet. And so I'm going to go and work on my Instagram bio instead, right? But on the flip side, the same thing. You want it so perfect, you don't have the time for it, and then you procrastinate. Or there's something underlying all of those where it's the fear that if it's not perfect, you're going to be judged for it, or you're not going to get the validation that you want. Because if we think about it, we've been going through our entire lives with some sort of validation. We get good grades, our parents praise us. We get good grades, we get scholarships. We get good grades, we get to go to a better university or college. We get there, we get grades on the papers. Our professors love that. You know, like, we have that feedback. We've always got this validation. Until you're top of the food chain, you're an entrepreneur and you don't get that validation anymore. Mm-hmm. So no wonder we hold back or we procrastinate on something, because we have to find that validation within ourselves. And self-validation and having that like unwavering self-trust can be difficult to find again, because we had it, or we think we did. We had it when we were younger. You know, I had so much confidence. I did all of these things. But, you know, now you're here and you don't know what you're going to get, because there is no grading system. There is nobody saying, good job, Robin. Nope. So, yeah, of course I'm going to procrastinate things. Of course I'm going to want it to be as perfect as I want, because the perfectionism too then comes back to my own validation. Well, I'm putting the pressure on myself to make it as best as I can be, because that's the pressure I've put on myself these years and years and years. So now I'm putting the pressure on myself. Now I need it to be perfect. Perfect doesn't exist. And so I keep putting it off, or I keep delaying it until I find that satisfaction within myself. Because really, there's nothing changed on the website that's really so dramatic. That true. You had to wait for it, right?
So true.
It's just more that self-validation of, yeah, you know what? I can do this. I'm putting this out here and letting my feelings go aside.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you said the part about judgment, because someone said that to me at one point, and they're like, well, are you afraid that it's not perfect? Or are you afraid someone's just going to judge you that it's not perfect? And I was like, get out of my head. That was really interesting too, because I also think that pressure component, right, which, you know, is why some people become procrastinators, right? Because then they work under, and they're like, oh, I work really good under pressure, right? So what I find happens is that if there's not pressure involved, they then sometimes get this mindset of like, well, I didn't earn it, or it's not going to be good enough, or it was too easy, so I have to change it. That's where that self-sabotage comes in, where it's like, oh, that was too easy to do. Like, I have to work under pressure, right? And so it becomes this total cycle, right? Where we have to get some of these high achievers like out of that cycle to recognize it can be easy. Like there are certain things in your job and your career that certainly can be easy. Would you agree with that? I would imagine that's a hard circle to reverse.
Oh no, you hit the nail on the head for sure. It's not, we're just so conditioned to go, 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 especially North American society, mm-hmm. without any breaks. And if we think about this high achieving background, all of the steps that we've gone through, and now we're here, and we're the ones putting the pressure on ourselves. When do you let off the pressure? You can't. It's a really hard switch to shut off. And then when you do shut it off, all kinds of feelings erupt. You have guilt for not working on your business. You feel shame that you're not working on your business. And then you put more pressure on yourself, and you talk the mean girl talk inside your head, instead of just allowing yourself to have time off or not work a full day. Like, I don't work full days anymore, but it took a lot of reconditioning to be, you know, in that state of mind where I don't have to sit down between 9 and 2 when my daughter's in school and work for 5 hours straight, which is what I used to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I can go for a walk. I can decide to sit down and read a book. Like, but that doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, it doesn't. And we have to almost, at least this was my experience, like sit in the discomfort of not working.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Right. And listen, I'm also very lazy on the flip side too. Like I could spend all day Sunday. Like, I don't think I got out of my pajamas. Today's Monday anyways, at the time of the recording. I don't think I got out of my pajamas yesterday until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's not like I'm go, 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 go all the time. But so I'll be two extremes. I'll either be like Netflix for 7 hours, you know, in my PJs and a blanket, or I'll be, oh, what are we going to do next? And what are we going to do now? And what are we going to do now? So allowing myself the break. And what I'm happy to say is that now, and we talked about this a little bit on Claire's podcast, like my business is a 7-figure business, and I have learned that I don't have to do it all. As a matter of fact, I should not be doing it all. Because if I'm doing it all, that means that I am not allowing my team the accountability and the opportunity to work to their fullest potential, right? So now I go into the studios, I don't know, one day a week, you know, if I want to. And I love how you spoke about that you take in your coaching programs, you take 2 months off. So, mm-hmm. and you made a really good point of now when you're online, it's like, there's always opportunity to work. Right. So, can you talk about that and what that experience was like for you?
It's funny that I say I take them off. I guess I don't totally take them fully off because my marketing is still going. And I don't plan ahead. So sometimes I'm very much an in the moment marketer. Mm-hmm. So if something comes to me, I'm going to go share that. But as far as client calls go or group coaching calls, I take 2 weeks in March when my daughter's on spring break, all of August and all of December. And the only thing that I am doing during those times is marketing. That's mm-hmm. it. And that was a shift. Mostly because I kept getting into investments that would go over those months and feeling like I'm investing in a coach or a program and I'm not even using it that month because I'm on vacation or my daughter's home, whatever the case is. And it started to like make me a little bit resentful of those investments. But also I wasn't intentionally taking time off. I was taking time off when my husband took time off, but I'm also, you know, home with my daughter all summer break and I need time off from that too. Right. So this year was the first year that I did that with my clients. So all my clients knew, you know, I'm available on Voxer if you need me. There's always going to be those little things, but we're not having calls this month. And it was great. And for them too, they took a step back and they were able to do actually a lot more behind the scenes stuff on their business that they'd been putting off because they'd been so involved in their client work. And yeah, it's so far, it's made an incredible difference to them.
Hey, I wanted to take a moment and interrupt this episode real quick. If you are enjoying what you're listening to and have listened to any other of my content and are interested in seeing if I would be the right person to help you grow, start, or even support you wherever you are on your fitness business journey, I invite you to schedule a free discovery call with me and see if we're the right fit to work with each other. You can go ahead and grab a time at www.kristagurka.com/discovery. And I really look forward to chatting with you. Now let's get back to the episode. It's great. I mean, when you said that, I was like, oh, I wrote that down. I was like, take 2 months off. Especially with the online business, because you're correct. Mm-hmm. Even because you could take it anywhere with you, which was my initial goal. So with transforming some of Pilates in the Grove onto online components with coaching, mentoring, and we do have a video on demand platform, which is online. My goal was that I did not have to be tied to a physical location anymore and in person with people. So that has been achieved, and that's great. I went last week to help my mom out who fell and had to have surgery, but I was still able to work. I was still able to do my coaching calls. I even saw clients and patients virtually, which people are like, how do you do that? I'm like, when you get really good at what you do, you can do that. But that was so, like, to me, that's freedom, that I could still work, but I could be wherever I wanted. Right. Mm-hmm. Now the second component to that, cause I fell kind of back into those high achiever traits where now I have to say, no, I'm going to take, like you said, maybe July or August or December. I love December because really in an online business, people are doing very little in December anyways. Like it's, so why not just be like, you know what? We're going to go dark. Like my copywriter, she goes dark for 2.5 weeks in December, and it's like no Voxer calls, no nothing. Like she is done and off. So that's also something to like, you know, aspire to. And so for the women that are in our coaching groups, I try to encourage them to at least start with like a CEO day. Can you take a CEO day? And you don't have to go anywhere. You can be in your home, but that you don't see clients, you don't teach classes, and you work on your business. Mm-hmm. And then can you maybe eventually take a CEO 2 days, right? And then maybe can you do a CEO week every quarter, maybe? And then maybe can you do it every month? Maybe, like, but slowly, like they don't have to rip the Band-Aid off all at once, right? They could do one little thing at a time, right? So is that something that you find frequently with the women that you work with, or the, you know, the people that you work with, that it's really hard for them to take their foot off the gas pedal?
Yeah. And I think part of it is that, and part of it is then people pleasing and feeling like they owe something to their clients to be available more. So that's definitely, and it's interesting, actually, you're so nice to your clients. I tell them, I'm like, okay, open your calendar. We're going in right now. We're booking off these dates for you, and you have like, you, no excuses. You're off, done.
Yeah. I am nice to them until they start, like this one other girl, I said, you need to have this by Friday in the group. Right. Yeah. But it's usually like that, hey, listen, this is what we're going to start with. And I will say 90% of them will go and do it for the most part. And then it's my job that once it's in their calendar, I feel like just to hold them accountable, right? Yeah. You're not going back on the schedule that day. I know you want to. I know you think the studio is going to burn down if you don't, but I promise it's not. So yeah, I am a little nicer at the beginning, but then afterwards I'm like, no, I need you to do this, or I need you to stop complaining about it.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of key too, right? If you're going to do it, go and do it and use that time wisely, or else we're not going to have conversations about why you're not doing it.
Correct. Exactly. You know, I was reading on your website something about your journey, and how, like, from corporate to the coaching certifications that you get. And one that popped out at me was the one that had to do with hypnosis. So if you're open to it, will you describe that a little bit and what that was like?
Yeah, I actually I took a program that was a mindset coaching program, and actually most of those certifications that you see on my website come from that program. Leadership and executive coaching is so funny. It's so different. It's just, here's how to coach. And here's how you hold a session. When you get into like real mindset coaching, you need tools and techniques to loosen our reality of the world. And so hypnosis was one of those things. And I, you know, getting into it, that wasn't even, I was like, okay, that's nice, but that's not why I'm doing this. And the more and more that I learn about hypnosis, actually, it's a very powerful tool. And I honestly haven't used it enough with my clients because there are still, I think, misconceptions about what hypnosis is. A lot of people think, oh, hypnosis is some sort of trance where I don't have control. But in fact, it is a bit of a trance, but you're always in control. And I think that's the best part about hypnosis, is that we are accessing that subconscious part of your brain, not the conscious part. And we're allowing that to have its voice. And that's really what a hypnosis session is for, is about refinding that subconscious voice that has been blocked by conditioning, by your conscious, logical voice. Because, I mean, how many times do you talk to somebody and they say, well, I know that, da, 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 but they're still not able to move forward because there's something deeper. And so hypnotherapy is really more about getting to that deeper.
Yeah. Deeper. I'm a big believer in it. And so I was very interested to see that there was a part of a coaching certification that came with that, which I think is phenomenal, because I do think getting to your subconscious and really recognizing maybe certain patterns that we take on as leaders, that the more we can work on, the better a leader we become. I am fully, fully convinced that the work I started doing personally on myself was the most important thing that allowed me to transition into a better leader. And I still make mistakes, because I do think there is, like with human design, there are certain things that are always going to be my strengths, and certain things that are maybe where my strengths, I don't like to say they're weaknesses, but just become like kryptonite a little bit. Right. And so, so I recognize, at least I can recognize that now and put language around it. Right. And say, I recognize that I am. And by the way, I've done every personality test, like Myers-Briggs, Strength Finders, Enneagram, Sacred Money Archetype, Human Design. So I'm always fascinated with what they say about me. So anyways, but it was really interesting. And what can, I'd love if we could, to maybe get into some tactical, maybe some actionable strategies that our listeners might be able to take directly from this podcast. So if let's say we're working through people pleasing. Okay. Let's say there is what's coming up for, and I'm certain of this because it happens in our industry all the time, saying no to clients. So in other words, these are people that are like brick and mortar. So your client wants to do a 7 a.m. session with you. You do not want to do 7 a.m. sessions anymore. How would you start to work with someone like me or someone in our industry to allow that conversation to happen with feeling as little guilt as possible?
Depends on how much guilt we have.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, coaching conversations are always the most effective in a quicker amount of time, because you have your coach asking you the questions that get you to think powerfully. We all have those answers within us. And so for anybody who doesn't have the ability to have a coach, the best thing that I can give to you today is somewhat of a journaling exercise. And I feel like there's people who love it and hate journaling. So I'm going to call this a writing exercise. It is a writing exercise where you need to ask yourself the question, why can't I create this boundary? And allow your mind to flow. And you're just going to write out whatever comes out. If it's one word and the word is softness, you write down softness and you can figure out what that means later. Sorry, you're frozen.
Oh, can you hear me now?
There we go. Yeah, okay. I was just making, I'm like, wait, are we still here?
We're still here.
Okay, good. Oh, there you are. Okay. So yeah, you know, if that's the word that comes to mind, you figure it out later. You can write down full sentences, point form, images, whatever you're seeing and hearing. And then you need to ask your subconscious, what else? What else? What else? And you continue to do this until you have let go of anything and everything that's kind of attached to this one topic. And what you're going to do after you've done that is look at it. What are things that I can work on right now? Okay. I have a history of always saying yes. And that stems from watching my mom always say yes to things and always being the caregiver. And so, okay, so now I know what the root cause is. Now I can go and work on that. And so you kind of have to figure out what that root is in order to figure out what it is that you can work on. So just knowing that you have something to work on. Then you're going to look at your other answers. What can I let go of right now? Because there's a lot of shit in our heads that we could just probably let go of. And we have some attachment to it, but not a deep attachment to it. But it keeps coming up. Forgiveness is a really great way to let go of something. Speaking it out loud, I am ready to let go of this. Mm-hmm. Or you can do some other energetic work. Meditations work really well for that as well. You can find cord cutting meditations, or in potentially, like if it's forgiveness meditations, but really just kind of letting go of those other things. And then there might be some actions that you can take. So if you're looking down and you're saying, okay, this keeps happening because I haven't blocked my schedule. I haven't changed my schedule. I just need to send the email. It's going to feel a lot easier to do those tasks because you know the underlying feelings now. You can see those emotions. You're managing them. You're dealing with them. And now you can go and do that task too. It's all about bringing it just to your awareness. Yeah. And as soon as it's brought to the awareness, it's so much easier to do those tasks versus working in the opposite way where it's like, go block your schedule. Somebody's not going to go do that because all of the emotion is still there.
Yeah, that's such great advice. And one of the things, even with what I've suggested to people, is that if they, because here's what I would say commonly happens. Like you would say to me, Krista, so what's coming up for you with telling that client you don't want to do 7 a.m.? And they would say, I would say, well, because then I won't get that revenue for that 7 a.m. client, right? And then you'd probably say, well, what would that mean if you don't get that revenue, right? Like this is commonly like how it goes back and forth, or I feel bad, they're going to go somewhere else, or they're going to think I'm not working hard enough, or et cetera, et cetera. And so sometimes as people are working through this, I can even sometimes suggest, and what really helped me for this too, was I put someone else in charge of my schedule for a little bit of a time so that they would hold the boundary better than I could initially. So I knew that I wanted to do it, but I also knew that I was going to have a really, really hard time initially coming off the schedule. And it was really hard for me. I put somebody else in charge of that boundary for me. And it was nothing to them. Like, it was just like, this is my job. My job is to keep her schedule clean. And even now I do that oftentimes too. It's much easier for me. But do you also believe then that it's almost like repetition? So the more you practice holding the boundary, the easier it becomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. It's actually interesting. As you were talking about that, I was like, oh, I need to tell you the story about Frank.
Let's talk about Frank.
Frank. So one of my clients had a, she had kept having a problem where people weren't paying her on time.
This is a big one in our industry too, by the way.
Yeah. So. Right. Mm-hmm. So she didn't have any assistants at the time, so it didn't make sense for her to delegate it. And she just couldn't, for whatever reason, get past this. She couldn't get past the people pleasing, the trying to be nice. She's trying to enforce this boundary. She's getting frustrated and irritated, but she's still trying to be, quote, professional, because that's what we got to be as women, right? So we developed her an alter ego, Frank.
I love this.
Frank had his own email. Frank got to write whatever he wanted to the clients to say, hey, you got to pay, not in a mean way, but in a way that actually worked. And because it was coming from a man.
Frank was her like billing department, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah,
accounts receivable.
Accounts receivable. You know, get me the money. We need this. People didn't even second guess.
No.
Didn't even second guess. And they would come and they'd be like, wow, Frank is like, he's putting the pressure on. And she was like, yeah.
That's why I have him. Yeah. He's really great for the company.
Yeah.
That's such good advice. That really, really is. Like, that was great. Again, it's like putting somebody, whether that person is real or fictional. It's fine. It you know what? It's okay. And then the more you hold that boundary, and you know, it's more like by saying yes to this other person, you're saying no to yourself. And I think that, you know, and I'm not saying when you're first starting your business, we do think, like, I don't know about you, but when I first started my business, I taught at 7 a.m. I taught at 7 p.m. I was like, I will do whatever I need to get business. Mm-hmm. Then once I started to grow my schedule and I became more of an expert and I was showing value to people, then I was able to say, like, this is how you can work with me, right? And now it's at the point that people either say yes, or I have an alternative. I understand this doesn't work for everybody. I really do. I can recommend somebody else for you, mm-hmm. you know? And so it gets easier, ladies or gentlemen, if you're listening, but you have to start holding the boundary. If you never start, it's like going to the gym or starting your, I don't know, being healthier or starting a meditative practice or whatever it is. The hardest part is starting. The hardest part. Someone said to me one time, you know what the heaviest thing in the gym is? The front door. Because that's the hardest thing to start. It's just doing it. Getting up at 7 a.m. to meditate or having a smoothie for breakfast instead of coffee. But the more you, it's like anything, the more you do it, the easier it becomes. And to be honest, I think if you become a better business owner for that, because then you can really show up in the times that you want to be showing up, right? You'll never be 100% aligned with that 7 a.m. person if that's the person, if you don't really want to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and how many times has your clients gone and done it and it hasn't been difficult at all? And for the most part, people are flexible.
100%.
I think 100%. We're always thinking too much about this awful result. Like, worst case scenario, they're going to just stop paying me and disappear forever. And I'm never going to get another client again. When in actuality, there's probably more flexibility than what's stated.
Yeah. And that happens a lot. That's a lot of the pushback I get with people when we talk about price increases. And, you know, because we're a time for money model in our industry, it's hard to just say, you know, maybe in our coaching online, you can always raise prices for new customers coming in, because sometimes there is a plethora of availability. But when you're working in a brick and mortar and you can only have 5 people in a class, at some point you have to raise everybody's prices because that's just how it works, right? And people, mm-hmm. you know, women especially, they feel bad. They don't want to like raise people's prices. And, you know, I don't know that my electric company feels bad about raising my electric bill 38% in the last like year, but we work through some of those things, right? And 99% of the time, nobody balks at it. But we put all of this aggravation in ourselves of like, oh my God, you know, And nobody does. And if you do have one or two people that do leave, which is understandable, right? It's okay. That's their choice. Usually the increase makes up for that. So maybe you're making the same amount of money, but you're working 2 hours less.
Yep.
Right. So I would love for you to tell everyone how they could give you money, how they could work with you, and in kind of like, what are your programs and where can they find out more information about you?
Yeah, the best place is to check me out on Instagram. I'm always there, robin.mcneil, and always drop a DM. I'm definitely open to chatting with people in the DMs. I have right now two programs or two ways to work with me. I have a mastermind and I do one-to-one coaching. The one-to-one coaching is a lot around the identity work and how do we shift that mindset from high achiever to CEO. So that's probably the best way to work with me at this point. And then if you stay tuned, I've got some group programs coming out in the future. One I think would be really exciting is I'm doing an energetics program. So deregulating the nervous system, which is much needed after we come from working in somebody else's business to having our own.
So much. We should that would be a great collaboration between the physical and the energetic. We do a lot. I will just tell you from a physical therapy perspective, I do a ton of dysregulation with the vagus nerve and all of that stuff, and teaching people, whether they want to learn it or not, how from a physical standpoint, our nervous system has a ton to do with what we're allowed to do physically. So if our nervous system does not, I'm going to only say this one sentence because I could literally talk about this for, because as much as
like
I
a love, whole new episode,
as much as I love business, the human body to me is my canvas. So what people don't understand is if your nervous system, for whatever reason, feels that you are unsafe, whether we're talking about unsafe emotionally, unsafe physically. So if your nervous system recognizes that your ankle joint is not safe in a certain range of motion, it will never allow you to have access to that mobility, no matter how much you can move your ankle around. So when we talk with athletes, and when we talk with even physical therapists, and I work with physical therapists, and they're like, I'm doing this mobilization and the person keeps coming back and we fix it during the session, but they keep coming back and it's off again and it's off again. I'm like, have you checked their nervous system? Have you checked their breath patterns? Have you checked any of that stuff? Because if you can dysregulate that system first, then work on the mobility, it will stick. But when you start getting people that keep coming back and it's not sticking, you have to look outside of that physical joint space. So, and I do 100%, but my mastery is really in the physical body, but I've seen this a ton in emotional capacity, right? So if our nervous system doesn't think we're safe in a certain environment or a certain situation or with whomever, it's endless what it could be, we react in certain ways. And it's fascinating to me. Literally, I could talk about this for the next 3 hours. It's so fascinating to me. So I'm so happy to see. I'm happy also to hear that more and more people are bringing energetics and stuff to mindset and to coaching. And I love it in my industry because this is what we do. So I tend to relate that a lot in our coaching programs and saying, so you know how when you work with a patient and you're trying to dysregulate their nervous system to help improve their back pain, this is what I'm doing for you, to get you out of this loop in your thinking and how you're going to succeed as a business person.
That's so powerful.
It's so great. But the same way patients come in and they don't think they need that stuff, because that's they're not there yet. They just need to know that their ankle needs to be fixed, right?
Yeah.
People come into business programs, they're like, well, I just need marketing.
Yeah.
I'm like, that you could think that, that's great. But I can tell you 100%, that's not what you actually need. Right. And so it's hard as a coach sometimes to get people to recognize that. Right. I mean, I think Marie Forleo, I don't know who said it first. She probably wasn't the first one to say it, but she's like, sell them what they want and then give them what they need, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I agree with you. It's been my entire journey.
And I think there's so much more. I personally think we've just cracked a window into what we know in the brain and with biotensegrity in the body and emotional systems and adaptations and all of this kind of stuff. So to me, and I will say, I do think one of the greatest skill sets or greatest advantages most successful people have is they're very curious. And so never always wanting to learn more. I don't care what industry you're in or profession, the ability to be curious, I think will make anybody successful. So if you have kids right now, like let them ask all the questions they want. And if you need a break, you could just be like, can we take a 5-minute break from the questions, but then ask me as many as you want. But like curiosity did not kill the cat. Curiosity kept the cat alive for nine lives and more. So, well, Robin, thank you so much for joining me for this. We're going to link all of her stuff up in the show notes. Definitely DM her on Instagram. It's fun. We've had like nice conversations as well over on the DMs. And until next time, my friends, bye for now. Thank you for listening to this episode of Female Empowered. If you like what we covered today, please leave a review for the show. This helps other female fitness and wellness professionals find the podcast and lets me know I'm sharing helpful information with all of you. If you'd love to get even more insights and find resources to help you market, streamline, and grow your clinic or client-based business, you can visit me at KristaGurka.com or follow me on Instagram at KristaGurka. That's at KristaGurka. See y'all next time.